Going Linux, episode 44, A Taste of Wine, Using Windows Programs in Linux. Welcome to the Going Linux podcast. I'm your host, Larry Bushy.
And I'm your co-host, Tom.
Going Linux is designed to provide you with practical, day-to-day advice on how to use Linux and Linux applications to get things done.
If you're new to Linux, moving to Linux, or just thinking about going Linux, then this is the podcast for you.
Currently, we publish 3 episodes a month. In our user experience episodes, we take 2 months to cover a topic. During the first month, we introduce the topic for new Linux users and recent converts. During month 2, we discuss the same topic from a more advanced perspective for users of Linux building their confidence and competence with the operating system.
And between user experience episodes, we have listener feedback episodes. And that's where we read listener email, play listener-generated audio, and answer listener questions. And finally, following the third Tuesday of each month, we post Larry's appearances on the Computer America show, minus the commercials.
In today's episode, A Taste of Wine.
We sure hope that you'll find this and all of our episodes helpful in learning about Linux and its applications and using them to get things done.
Well, Tom, some of our listeners have expressed a lot of interest in this topic.
Yeah, we keep getting it, and I am not an expert in wine by any means. You've done some research into it, and you've used it more than I have. So this is pretty much going to be on you, Larry.
Okay, that sounds fair to me.
By the way, our listeners might notice a little different sound on the podcast today. I'm in a monastery in Tibet, and we hacked into a military satellite, so it sounds a little weird. We'll work it out. Now, we're going to Skype completely today.
Yeah. So I'm recording Tom's end from Skype and recording my end on my regular microphone, so that's why I sound okay, and Tom's side sounds a little wobbly from time to time, but overall, for a Skype call, it's not too bad. What do you think, Tom?
I sound like this in person, so it's all right.
Oh, okay. I wouldn't know.
That's right.
Anyway, maybe we should start with a description of what wine is.
Let's do that.
Okay, so wine is a beverage we use to help us get us through these recording sessions. And
and it's really important to let it breathe.
That's true.
Okay, no. Wine is sort of a Windows emulator, even though W-I-N-E means wine is not an emulator. I don't know why they say that. I don't get it, but
yeah,
sort of is an emulator.
Sort of. I guess, technically speaking, it's not emulating Windows. It's a program that allows DOS and Microsoft Windows programs to run on Unix-based operating systems like Linux. It has a program loader that loads and runs programs written for Windows. It also uses a set of libraries so that when the Windows program looks to the Windows API, Application Programmer Interface, for some DLL file or a data file or some other program, Wine does the translation, and instead of running that Windows resource, it uses the Unix or X11 equivalent. What that means to you, the user of Linux, is that Wine integrates with the Linux desktop and file system. It lets Windows applications run right alongside your native Linux applications. You can start your Windows applications right from your regular Linux desktop environment, and you can run a Windows application window side by side with a native Linux application, copy and paste from one to another, and run that Windows program at full speed.
At full speed?
Yeah, at full speed. What I was reading on the Wine site is that in some cases, the Windows program will run slower. In some cases, it might actually run faster. So, you know, in general, my experience has been that the applications run slower, but it may just be the applications I was using.
Sure. And there are other ways to run Windows programs in Linux. You can use a virtual machine software like VMware to run a Windows installation inside a virtual machine, or you can use Win4Lin, that's W-I-N, numeral 4, L-I-N, to run a specially adapted Windows version on Linux. There's also a package that neither Larry or I have tried for gamers, and I guess this is in its infant stages, and it's called Play on Linux. And that has a list of supported Windows games that it will supposedly run using Wine. It tweaks Wine to its own needs.
Interesting. Okay.
With VMware or Win4Lin, you need to purchase an actual copy of Windows to run in the virtual environment. You are potentially taking a performance hit since you're running an operating system inside another operating system. But those aside, Wine doesn't require a licensed copy of the entire Windows operating system, just a licensed version of the Windows application you want to run. And if it's a free application, okay.
Mm-hmm.
So, if you already have a disk with the program on it, you're ready to go.
So, at this point, you may be wondering, how do I get a copy of Wine? Well, the first thing to do, if you're running Linux, is to check the repositories. Many distributions of Linux come with Wine either pre-installed or available on the repositories, usually available on the repositories. And if it's not available there, then you can go to the Wine HQ site. We'll have a link in the show notes to that site and the other resources that are available to you. The site is available at www.winehq.org. By the way, do you run Google Earth or the Picasa photo management program in Linux? If so, you're already running Wine. These programs are not really native Linux applications. They've been packaged.
Oh, I didn't know that.
That's right. They've been packaged to run in their own customized version of Wine within Linux. If you want to run other Windows applications, though, you still need to install Wine.
So now we've installed Wine. How do we install a Windows program? Well, if the installer ends in .exe, you double-click on the installer, just like in Windows. Or you could also right-click on it and choose Run With, and then pick Wine. Or if all else fails, open a terminal window and cd, change directory, to the folder containing the installer's .exe file, and run the installer with Wine by typing Wine, followed by the installer's file name. If the installer ends in MSI or something else, well, those files cannot be run directly. You need to use the MSI exec, that's MSI EXEC program. MSI files can be installed in Wine from the terminal like this. Type Wine space MSI exec space / lowercase I space, and then the name of the file. That will then run the MSI program the same as if you had double-clicked it in Windows.
So if double-clicking the .exe or right-clicking and choosing Run with Wine doesn't work, and the application is listed at WineHQ as being able to run under Wine, then the WineHQ site tells us that we should, quote, contact whoever built your Wine packages and complain, unquote. If you downloaded Wine from your distribution's repositories, that means you should go to their support forums, etc., for your distribution.
And you can sometimes work around problems like this by using the command line instead of the file manager. To do this, open a terminal window, navigate to the folder where your application is, and run it by typing Wine and then the program name .exe. It's how the Wine developers usually do it.
Okay, so let's say you have a Windows program installed under Wine, and you now want to run the program. That sounds like a logical thing to do. In GNOME, you choose the Applications menu, then Wine, and then the Programs menu. In KDE, you select the K menu, then Wine, and then Wine Applications. You should find an icon there for the program that you just installed. You can sometimes also find an icon on your Linux desktop, just as it would be under Windows. You should be able to use these icons just as you would under Windows.
Now, what my one experience with Wine was my favorite BitTorrent client, which is MicroTorrent, and I double-clicked the EXE file, and a window came up that said, "This looks like a Windows file. You want to run it under Wine?" I said, "Okay." And it did a normal install, asking the questions.
Yeah.
And one of the questions was, "Do you want an icon on the desktop?" I said, "Sure." And ever since then, I've had my icon there that I can click on, and it starts, and it runs, and it's fine.
Those are basically the steps that we just described, aren't they?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So, what if you can't get your application running under Wine? Well, go look at our show notes. We're going to have some references in there for you. We're going to point to the WineHQ site, where they have the FAQ, the Frequently Asked Questions, the documentation, and a how-to. And they even have a live support chat. If you're still having problems, and by now you shouldn't be, but if you're still having problems getting that Windows application to run, there may be other ways to get to your goal other than using Wine. Number one, you can look for a version of the software that runs natively in Linux. Many applications are available in repositories or as backports. And Larry, what's a backport?
A backport is an application that is written for, let's say, in today's world, we're using Ubuntu Hardy Heron and Ubuntu Ibex, Intrepid Ibex, is about to come out. When they write the software for Intrepid Ibex, they may backport some of those more updated programs so that you can install them in Hardy Heron if you're still running it. So that's what a backport is. Future versions that have been made available to run in previous versions of your distribution.
Right. You can also look for Linux alternatives to the Windows application, and we have links to several lists of those in the show notes. You may consider running Windows in a virtual machine like VMware, VirtualBox, or, I'm going to hurt myself saying it, Qemu, Q-E-M-U. And lastly, consider dual booting Windows and Linux if you really have to.
Right. Now, I have been using Wine to run a few things. I tried installing iTunes under Wine, and the WineHQ site says that some of the older versions of iTunes work. The reason I was doing that is so that I could test our feed in iTunes without having to have a Windows machine to do it. Unfortunately, I have a more recent version of iTunes than the one they said works under Wine. And so when I installed it, it doesn't work quite right, so I've stopped using it. The other thing that I installed under Wine recently is a copy of Microsoft Office Student and Teacher Edition, or Teacher and Student Edition, or whatever they call it. And I had purchased that quite a while ago, when I was taking some university courses, and the university insisted on using Microsoft Office. So I went out and bought a copy of it, and fortunately the university had a discount on the software, and so I only spent an arm rather than an arm and leg. And at any rate, I have this copy. The good news is with the Student and Teacher Edition, you can install it on up to 3 computers. Unfortunately, I didn't have 3 Windows computers to install it on. So I thought I would try and see if it would work under Wine. So I checked the WineHQ site. I found out that this particular version of Microsoft Office wasn't listed, the Student and Teacher Edition. But Office 2003 in general was listed. I was able to get it installed and running, and I wanted to check out primarily the Excel macros and see if the Visual Basic application would work. The WineHQ site said that it would, and turns out that it does work, sort of. Not all the things that I was doing in Visual Basic were working, So I thought, okay, well, I may as well go ahead and uninstall the Microsoft Office because there's no way I'm going to use it. I went to the uninstaller, which is also in the Wine menu, where you can uninstall Windows applications. And it starts the Windows uninstaller, but then it wouldn't uninstall Microsoft Office. It told me there was some sort of error. So now I have this installation of Microsoft Office taking up space on my hard drive. I know I could go into the directories that Wine has created for Microsoft Office and delete them all, but I'd like to figure out how to fix that so that it actually works.
Instead of just going and tearing its little heart out.
Exactly. The other thing I could do is Wine is installed in a hidden directory in Linux. It's the .wine directory under your home directory. And I could delete that whole thing. That would uninstall Wine. I would just reinstall Wine and start over again. So there are a couple of different ways to do that. But I like pain, so I'm trying to figure out how to get this thing to uninstall properly and frustrating myself tremendously. So, Tom, how about your experiences?
As I said, the only thing I've tried it on is MicroTorrent, which is spelled U-T-O-R-R-E-N-T, but it's a funny-looking U. It's the one that means micro. And it doesn't run flawlessly. Once in a while, it locks the screen, and I have to go right-click on the icon and hit the hide/show selection, and then everything's fine again.
Mm-hmm.
That is one of the best BitTorrent programs around, as far as I'm concerned.
Mm, okay.
And it's running on my Linux machine.
All right. Well, there are Linux torrent applications. There's a KTorrent for KDE,
oh, sure,
which runs in GNOME as well, and there are some others that are designed for GNOME, but it sounds to me like you like the way this particular torrent application worked.
I do.
Yeah.
I was never going to say that again.
Oh, well, hey, that's why Wine exists. So, as you can tell from our experiences, Tom's and my experiences, you, our listeners, may find yourself wanting to know where you can get help for Wine. And the Wine HQ site that we've mentioned many, many times has a wiki as well as the Wine HQ documentation and some mailing lists, all available in the links, all excellent resources. And if you are looking for help with a specific application, you may want to search the applications database. The AppDB, as they call it, is a place where users can share their experiences by submitting test data, sharing tips and tricks, and asking questions. That's where I went to find out whether the particular version of Microsoft Office I was using was ever installed and tested. And, of course, it was installed and tested by users. You can also try the live support chat that Tom mentioned earlier on from their website if you want a warm body to help you. And there's also an IRC channel. It's #WineHQ on irc.freenode.net. And usually there are several knowledgeable Wine users hanging out there, and often the developers will be lurking there too. So see that IRC for more important information on the WineHQ IRC channel.
Yeah, my experience with such channels is you've got 5 people logged in or 10 people who are there to help, and 20 are there to ask questions, and the text is flying by so fast that I can't read that fast. So maybe somebody answered my question and maybe not, but I get all confused on those high volume, high traffic RC channels.
Yeah, that's true. It's hard to follow sometimes. So maybe if you find that hard to follow, the live support chat would be a good option for you.
Right. So let's sum it up. And this comes from Debunking Wine Myths on the Wine HQ site. It says, Wine is often the best way to use Windows software without giving up on Linux. The most obvious alternative is to dual boot. This is a solution that provides the best compatibility. However, it requires that you acquire a Windows license and then dedicate a good chunk of your hard drive to Windows. The most significant drawback is that each time you will want to use a Windows application, you'll have to reboot to Windows. Then you will find yourself forced to close all Linux applications just to run that one Windows application. You may quickly get tired of this, or will find that such a situation is impossible to justify in a business environment. And let me add to this, here's me breaking in on the text here with another thought. If you're going to do a boot, I suggest that whenever you run Windows, unplug your cable, just to avoid viruses and malware and all the nasty things that Windows is subject to. All right, back to the text. The next solution is to install virtual machine emulation software such as VMware, Win4Lin, or Plex86. Then you can use Windows applications without suffering such big disruption. But it still requires that you acquire a Windows license and dedicate as much disk space to Windows. Further, you'll pay for the added convenience if using VMware or Win4Lin, you have to buy another license, and more importantly, you now have to dedicate a good chunk of your computer's memory to the virtual machine. Performance will take a significant hit, too. Using Wine lets you avoid all of that overhead. Windows license, hard drive space required by Windows, memory and performance hit taken by emulated virtual machines. Now you can start your Windows application straight from your regular desktop environment. Place that application's windows side by side with native applications, copy and paste from one to the other, and run it at full speed. And that's the end of the text.
Okay. And I'm not so sure about paying for the VMware or Win4Lin. I'm not familiar with Win4Lin, and the text said something about having to pay for a license for that. I'm not sure about that.
I have VMware, and I didn't pay for it.
Yeah. I don't use VMware, but I seem to remember something on their website about paying for something, but I don't remember what it is. So let's assume they're correct. They're the experts here.
Sure.
I think that's pretty much it for our introduction to Wine, Tom. In our next episode, we have a listener feedback episode. Until then, as always, you can go to the articles and show notes at goinglinux.com for more information and detailed instructions on how to do the things that we write about, including screenshots where appropriate. You can email us with comments, questions, and suggestions.
And you can send us an audio comment by email. We love your suggestions, your feedback, your questions, and we'll play it on the show. Email those audio files to goinglinux@gmail.com.
You can download the episodes of this podcast from our website, or you can use the Flash Player that's right there on the show notes page to play them from the website.
And you can also get future episodes delivered directly to your computer automatically as soon as a new episode is available. Instructions on how to do that are on the website.
Until next time, thanks for listening.
Talk to you later.
New music provided by Mark Blasco at podcastthemes.com.